comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, wherever you happen to be all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show, talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. It's the show where you matter. Hey, what'd you think about last week's K-Files edition? I told you there would be some good stuff in there. And some of you were sharp enough that you, though you had not subscribed, you did in time to get last week's edition, and I've already gotten some emails from folks saying how glad they are that they did that. There was an article in there about a wall on Mars, and I put pictures of it in there, and I put a series of pictures so that you could see what I was talking about before I zoomed in, because when you zoom in, it does get pixelated. And there are people who are always willing to say, oh, well, that's just pixels. So before we zoomed in, I pointed out at least one feature that you could see before I zoomed in. I think there's every possibility that is what they're headed with the Opportunity rover to look at. I think there's every possibility that that's the case. And I hope you enjoyed that. I've gotten a few emails about that. And as always, I'm delighted to get your email to find what do you think about this, that, or the other thing, whatever it may be. Some people, if they send me an email and I write back and say, well, yeah, it could be this or that, but you know, and it appears that I'm headed a different direction. They think, oh, well, he disagrees with me and that hurts my feelings. Well, nobody sent me an email saying I hurt their feelings, but don't do that. I mean, come on. This, when you crawled over into the Kevin Smith Show, you crawled over into the big play yard. It's where the big kids play. And we all have different opinions, and it's okay. That's the wonderful thing about it. The differing opinions are okay. We call that freedom of speech and freedom of thought. Have you taken a look at our website? I hope you have. And take a look at the survival meter. We've been a couple of months without having to use it. But people are falling on very hard times, and some folks are, and some folks are not. And it affects the show, and so it affects the revenue of the show. And so what we need is for you to help us out. We need you to help us out by making a donation. Doesn't matter if it's $2, $5, $10, $50, $100, $1,000, whatever it is you feel comfortable with, and we will use it to continue the work we do here, broadcasting, getting you the very best information that we possibly can, and bringing it to you night after night here on The Kevin Smith Show. It's a variety of information, that's for sure. We don't have an agenda, so just because we bring someone on the air doesn't mean we're promoting what they say. What we are promoting is you getting to hear what they say. So you can ask questions and think about it. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. You know, World War II was kind of a big event, wouldn't you say? And a lot of, it was called a world war because most of the big players on this planet were involved. But a lot of times, when we think about World War II, we think of it, and this is just normal, it's natural, we think of it in terms of our country, and, you know, whatever country you're in, you think of it in terms of what happened with your country during World War II, and that's just normal. One of the countries involved was Canada, and during World War II, they played an active role. An important role, and one of the people who played that role with and for Canada is my guest this evening, Stan Fulham. He's the author of a book called Challenges of Change, an excellent book. He's formerly with the Canadian Air Force, formerly a prisoner of war during World War II, former air controller with NORAD. And Stan, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, thank you, Kevin. Kevin, you're not coming on. You're coming on rather softly. Could you come up a little higher, please?
Okay, I've turned the volume up all it can stand.
Okie doke.
All right, Stan. You were in the Canadian Air Force during World War II, and it was during that time that you saw your first UFO. So take us back to those days. Tell us a little bit about your service during the war and how it came about that you saw this UFO.
Yes, during the war I served for about 5 years with the Royal Canadian Air Force, and I served in a squadron that was in Bomber Command in flying out of England. I was shot down in November 1943 on a bombing raid to Leipzig, and was taken prisoner, and I was moved around to various prison camps, but one of the camps that we were at in 1944 was Stalag 357 near Torun in Poland. And on a hot July day, somebody ran into the hut and said, "There's a rocket up in the sky above." So we all ran out to see this rocket, and yes, certainly it was there, all right. It was flying very high and very fast, a very bright reddish color, and we assumed, of course, that it had to be a German rocket, because the Germans at that time had the V-1s and V-2 rockets. And until somebody confronted the situation, when he said, "Yes, but it's flying from east to west, and we're in Poland, so obviously it's not coming from Germany." Mm-hmm. And Russia does not have that technology. So we realized that that it had some other significance. Well, we didn't know what it was. And the thing is, Kevin, I want to make this clear. In this camp, we had British airmen, prisoners of war, American, Canadian, Australian, and so forth. And we were all highly trained in aircraft recognition. That was extremely important. You didn't have too much time to... And when you met up with a foreign craft to identify what it was and its various capacities. So that was extremely important. We knew this was no aircraft, but we thought no more about it, because never once did anybody ever suggest or even think of an alien reality. That was not a concept in World War II, regardless of what you read and what you hear about. I've never, ever heard of it. It wasn't until after the war, and with Donald Keogh's experience with the flying saucers over Oregon, as you will recall. And then, of course, in my camp were also fighter pilots who had experience with Foo Fighters. So, but never again did we ever think that this was an alien, equipment, whatever, spacecraft, mm-hmm. or anything like that.
Well, now let me ask you this. You were in Poland, and since the war, and since all of the various investigations about UFOs and everything over all these decades, information has come out that the Nazis had a place in Poland where they were experimenting with very exotic craft, and some people call them the Nazi flying saucers. Do you think there's any possibility that what you saw might have been one of those?
No, absolutely not. I inquired from my source, the Transcender Group, about that, and they see all of these things. See, every thought, word, and deed that's ever occurred in the universe is in the Akashic Records, and so it's there for them to see. And then I asked them about that, and they said, no, there's that the Germans had a thought about developing somewhat of a spacecraft. It was circular, no wings, no, that type of thing. The problem is, where the problem really was, is it was in the generating the power for this kind of use. So it never got off the ground. So the Germans never had anything besides a V-1 and V-2 rockets. It certainly had nothing like what we saw above in the skies in Poland in 1944.
All right, now can you describe it for us? You were saying it was red. Could you see the shape of this thing?
It was almost in the shape of a large cylinder.
Uh-huh.
It was about 3-4 times the size of a normal aircraft. It was very high. It could have been around 30,000 to 40,000 feet. But the speed is what confounded us, because it was always traveling at hundreds of miles an hour. So it was not an ordinary aircraft that we knew about.
And it was making no sound, is that correct?
And no sound. And it had no wings. So obviously it wasn't a conventional aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
But again, like I said, it never occurred to anybody that this could be an alien spacecraft. That came years later, and then I realized when I talked to some of my former POW inmates that we discussed that situation, and then we realized, yes, indeed, it could have been something like what Donald Kehoe had thought, that it's probably this flying saucer, some foreign mm-hmm. alien spaceship.
Okay, now were you in these prison camps until the end of the war?
Yes.
Okay, so the war ends, and eventually you get back home. Did you resume your service with the Canadian Air Force, or did you do something else? What happened after the war?
Well, I know I was released along with, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands of other military people, and I attended university for about 3 years, ran out of money, and then I decided I was going to Australia. And so I went to Vancouver, but there were no ships available. And so the manager of British United Press had suggested that if I went there, that I go and work for BUP, British United Press, which I did. It was quite an experience. I really enjoyed that. But then one day that a ship did appear on the horizon, and it was going to Australia with a load of lumber from Vancouver Island. And I went there, and I traveled, sailed around the Pacific for about 2 years, and then returned. And then I returned to the Air Force, to what is known as the Permanent Air Force, in about 1954. And then when I returned, I was no longer flying, but I was recruited as a fighter controller to work in NORAD. And I went to Tyndall Air Force Base in Florida for my training, and from there I was transferred to the West Coast. I did my advanced training at Yuma Air Force Base, and then, because, you see, this is the thing is, Kevin, I want to make clear, because there's a lot of misconception about this. People somehow think NORAD, when you're talking about NORAD, this ultra-military organization. It is not an organization. It is a system of defense. And then it is managed and is operated by the USAF, United States Air Force personnel, and the Canadian Air Force personnel, because this is a continental defense system.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically what I did then. For several years, I worked in NORAD as a fighter controller.
Okay, now let's step back to the time when you were working for, I believe you said, the British UP?
Press.
Mm-hmm. What did you do for them?
Oh, I was basically a reporter.
Uh-huh.
And first of all, I worked in the office. And as you know, in those days, of course, there was no television. That was before we had the teletypes.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And you had these teletypes receiving news from all over the world. And then I would get these reports, and I condense them to a 10 or 15-minute radio news article, or an article for the Vancouver papers. That's basically what I did. And then after about 3-4 months of that, then I was taken out to be trained as a reporter, and I went to an international conference in Vancouver Hotel with union delegates from all over the world and that type of thing. So it was quite an experience, a wonderful experience.
Well, this would be a good time for me to throw this in. This is
Australia.
This is
to go to Australia.
Okay, this would be a good time for me to insert this information. Because I'm really hard on major media these days because of major media's refusal to take the UFO phenomenon seriously. But of late, there have been a few cracks in that dam, and there have been some very positive signs in major media. Today, there was a press conference at the National Press Club, and it was Robert Hastings and a bunch of people from the Air Force talking about UFOs that they had witnessed at some of our nuclear sites. Well, CNN has a video clip of that on their site, and it's just straight. There's no ha-ha, there's no ridicule. They just put it up there, and it's just straight, and that's all anybody can ask for. And so I applaud them for doing that.
Yes,
and this may be yet another turn of major media towards getting back to just reporting. I hope so.
Well, that's Kevin. That's been my experience. When I first wrote the first edition, and I sent it to a number of to people throughout North America, but I also sent it to the American Embassy in Ottawa here in Canada, and the public relations officer called me a couple 3 weeks later, and he said, "Read the book," and he said, "I find it very, very interesting." He says, "I suggest you send it to so and so in the New York Times, the Washington Post, and so forth, you know, the major newspaper in the United States," which I did. I never got a single response. I also sent it to all the major newspapers in Canada, never got a single response. I sent it to politicians, and I've talked to politicians, but they were not interested because nobody wanted to stick their neck out in case they would lose a few votes.
Mm-hmm.
See, this was a tragedy of the situation, and it hasn't changed much there, Kevin. I don't think it has changed much at all. I don't know what it'll take to change the thinking, the mentality of politicians. But one thing I wanted to tell you, and because I've talked to a lot of politicians about this, and I also talked to many ufologists and scientists and this sort of thing over the last 50, 60 years, and I find is that politicians in general haven't the faintest idea about the UFO the phenomena. If you want to know anything about the UFO phenomena, talk to people like yourself. You're the people who know, and myself. And there's other people, like now, there are a lot of USAF officers and former NORAD officers that worked in NORAD are now coming out and speaking about their experience. So that's, but they, the politicians, haven't the faintest idea about what it's all about. Well, at least it is the odd one. But
well,
they're not going to speak out.
I can't say anything about what are the Canadian politicians like, but in this country, the politicians don't have the faintest idea about a great many things. And I do know what it will take to change it, and that's called replacement. But I don't see much of that being possible. All right, now, we've just got about 4 minutes here, three and a half minutes, and we'll be at our next break. But you had a situation when you were a NORAD fighter jet controller. You had a situation where you scrambled some jets to intercept UFOs.
Yes.
What was that about?
Yes. Well, one night I reported for duty as a duty controller, and the man I was replacing, the officer was replacing, Bill Taylor, and told me, he says, there are two UFOs hovering over the channel out there, about 2 miles off the base of the where the squadron was located. And so we went outside, and along with several others, and we could see them very plainly. They were out there sitting at about, hovering at about 1,000 feet above water. Lights, they had intermittent lights around the perimeter of their saucers, and they were about 4 to 5 times the size of a normal fighter jet. And they're making no sound, but just hovering there. So I went back in, and I had to, well, I was taken over, and I had to do something about this situation. So we reported them as unknowns to NORAD, and then I scrambled the 2 standby fighter jets to go out and investigate. And no sooner had they taken off than these 2 UFOs flew away at tremendous speed and then stopped and hovered over the Pacific Ocean about 6 or 8 miles west of Vancouver. And eventually, about minutes, about 10 minutes later, the fighter jets arrived at the at the UFOs. When they were about 2-3 miles away, the UFOs then disappeared over the Pacific Ocean. And so in the morning, I filed my report, but the base commander called, and he says, "We are getting calls from the media in Vancouver, Seattle, Victoria, about these strange lights that were seen last night, including, you know, these fighter jets, of course, which they saw." And he says, "As you know, there was nothing unusual that happened last night, so there's no reason for us to be talking to the media."
Ooh.
We backed full. I know exactly what he was saying. We understood that that was the policy, and the squadron commander, sometime later in a little conversation we're having, and he says, "It's a good thing you didn't talk to the media, Stan, because," he says, "I think your career would have been over." And I think that was very... See, at that time... Well, can I just expand upon this a bit, Kevin?
Yeah. I'll tell you what. Now, just as long as you understand, in 30 seconds, we go to break.
Well, no, I'm not sure I could do it.
All right, well, I'll tell you what. Let's do this. When we come back from break, we'll just pick up right here, and we'll just continue with the story.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Stan Fulham. Always the best here at the Kevin Smith Show, and we have only just begun to hear some amazing things from Stan Fulham. I'm interested in knowing when we come back, and I know you are, about how this was handled with the press. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we're talking with Stan Fulham this evening, and we're talking about his experiences and what he learned from them dealing with UFOs when he was in the military, and part of that time serving as a fighter flight controller for NORAD. Stan, as we were stepping away for break, you just told us about the incident where you scrambled the 2 standby fighter jets, and then one of your colleagues, your commander, got the message to you that you didn't need to be talking with the press, and then one of your colleagues said it was a good thing you didn't talk with the press because your career would probably be over, and you were about to tell us something else, and we had to step away for break.
Yes, Kevin. About 2 weeks later, NORAD called for a meeting with the squadron commander, the technical officer, and myself to meet with these intelligence officers from NORAD. We met, and actually what they were concerned about is they wanted to refine the reporting process to know more about the airworthiness and the characteristics of these UFOs. They had no There were no complaints about what I had done, no, anything like that. They just wanted to develop a better refining process in terms of the lights, in terms of the maneuverability of the spacecraft, speeds, and all this sort of thing. And that's the reason why the technical officer was there. It was a very interesting meeting. And that evening, I sat in the bar with, I'll call Dave, my friend. He was a major in the use of intelligence and seconded to NORAD. And he told me of a great number of things that he knew about, which were very, very interesting. And one of the things he mentioned, not at that meeting, but later on, he said to me that when we were discussing the control of information relating to UFOs and this sort of thing, and he said there was an agreement signed, I think he said in 1956, between the United States and Canada. Well, first of all, it was United States legislation which limited or rather controlled the dissemination of information relating to the UFO phenomena. And several months later, Canada signed in with this agreement because, you see, the thing is, it wasn't working too well because commercial airliner pilots were, in Canada, were reporting seeing UFOs all over the place. And so that contravened what the legislation, the American legislation, was all about. So I talked to Mr. Paul Hellyer, who was the Minister of National Defense in Canada at that time, about that. And he says he never saw, he wasn't aware of it, and he never signed that document. I said, no. And I said, Dave, my friend, said that he didn't see any names attached to the document he saw. It could have been a copy. But he says, it may not have been the first time that a document of that kind was signed by top military people and the politicians were left out of the picture completely.
Whoa!
So I thought that was rather interesting, but it was the mindset, the military mindset, about what do you tell the public, what do you tell the civilians, including politicians. And he was telling me about a meeting, at a mess dinner, you know, in the military you have, where the officers have what they call these mess dinners, where a very formal occasion. And the general there told them about, he was talking to several of the intelligence officers, and he told them about an experience he had several years earlier when he appeared before a congressional subcommittee on continental defense in camera. And he says, those SOBs humiliated me, ridiculed me, and in fact, they insinuated that NORAD officers were suffering from illusions and delusions. And one of the junior officers standing by listening to him, he said, well, General, he says, if the public were made more aware, if they were more aware of the realities regarding the UFO phenomena, then the politicians may react otherwise. And the general said to him, the public, he says, they're uneducated, they're uninformed, misinformed, they're just too unsophisticated, and they're just too effing stupid to cope with the realities of an alien reality. And then he turned to my friend Dave, I'll call him Dave, and he said, and I tell you, Dave, if you want a career in this Air Force, you keep your mouth shut about UFOs. Dave never forgot that. And his attitude, his mindset was the same, is that you cannot deal with the public. They won't understand it. They'll get all confused. They'll just create more confusion than anything else. It's best that you don't tell them that. And actually, Kevin, you know, that was my mindset as well, and it almost still is. I don't think you can deal with that. I don't know how we're going to resolve this problem, but I don't think it's the public that's going to resolve the problem.
Well, look, there are a great many mushrooms out there in the public. They sit in the dark by choice. They feast on a steady diet of manure, and they know nothing.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean they're incapable. And if forced into the realization of a reality, I think they're capable of understanding it. I think they're capable, in the main, of grasping the reality. But, you know, at the same time, you know, there are medical doctors that do not subscribe to the concept of disease being spread by germs. There aren't many, but there are some. Now, you know, if I find my doctor doesn't believe in basic germ theory, I've got to go get a different doctor. But there's some, and these guys are smart. They're doctors, but they just don't buy the germ theory. There's a few. So, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of, I agree with what the general said, except I would say that doesn't mean they're incapable of understanding.
No, I don't.
And you know,
capable.
The military, you know, a moment ago you said something that caused me to say, whoa, and that is the military between two countries signing a high-level agreement without the informing and without the permission and blessing of the politicians who are their bosses. And if that's going on and if that's happening, then the military can shoulder 100% of the blame for the public being ignorant.
Well, on that score then, let's, just 1 minute here, Kevin. Let's go back to NJ-12. All right?
All right.
Okay, see, this is where I think the mindset first set in, and I'll just going through here to see where I got this thing on NJ-12, and I'll read to you what I had written about this matter. And,
well, I just think, you know, if they're hiding information from the people who are empowered to be their bosses, and they're hiding information from them, they have to shoulder 100% of the blame for the ignorance of the public.
Yes, it raises us to some very serious questions, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It certainly does. And so that's the reason why I thought is that the MJ-12 situation explains the military mindset very well. So if I could just briefly tell you about it, then it'll maybe help to explain why their attitude is such as it is.
Yeah, go ahead.
According to Dave, now he's an intelligence officer, and he served. He didn't get out like I did after the war. He stayed in with USAF. He worked in the intelligence, and then he was transferred to NORAD when NORAD was established in the early 50s. But he was well aware of what had happened previously. For example, he was telling me on one occasion about MJ-12. It was established by President Truman. And when President Truman established MJ-12, there was almost a paranoia about the situation because they knew about the British aliens because they had contacted them. They had bodies in Area 51. They had crashed UFOs going way back to 1931. So they knew they had all that information, but they still were very cautious about the relationship with the aliens. So there was a bit of a paranoia there. But there was also at that time, and I'm sure you're a bit young, so you wouldn't know, you wouldn't have read all the reports that came through at that time in the United States dealing with the loss of all their atomic secrets and the loss of also all their top technology and the top secrets dealing with the Philadelphia experiment to the Russians. And this was done by the so-called Jewish communists. That was the prevailing attitude at that time. Senator Joe McCarthy, I'm sure you're well aware of him, and your listeners are
sure
well aware of McCarthy. And he raised this concern to a paranoia. Everybody was very concerned about it in the United States, and I followed it very well because I was with British United Press at that time, and so I followed it very well. And I knew their concerns. And the military were very concerned about it. And their attitude is, we have been involved with the UFOs since the 1920s, and we managed to keep this under the lid. We kept this quiet, away from the public. And look what happened when the civilians were in control with the atomic bomb and the Philadelphia experiment. They were determined there was never going to happen again. Now, if Truman set up the MJ-12, it was the president was on the committee. There was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. There was the FBI, the CIA, and I think five or six civilian scientists, Oppenheimer, and a few others. The military were very unhappy about that situation. They certainly didn't trust these civilians, and they were determined to get rid of them. Of course, isn't that Eisenhower replaced Truman, and Eisenhower had full trust in the military. Didn't have very much trust in civilians either. As you know, remember his comments about his concerns about the military-industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
So what the military did, according to Dave, and I have it in my book, Challenges of Change, they would call, the office, the controlling MJ-12, was in, I think, in, with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. They would call a meeting, but oops, they had forgotten to notify the civilians. Well, a month or 2 months later, they have another meeting. And, oh, what? They, for once again, forgot to notify the civilians. The civilians got the message, and so they bowed out. And then what they did, they removed FBI, and then the CIA was relegated to, according to Dave, and he says the CIA is not a full-time member of this MJ-12. He says they were sidelined, and they're provided information occasionally. So I asked him, well, then, who is handling this? He said, well, nobody really knows, but he says they have a system, a compartmentalized system of about four major sections in the UFO cabal in Area 51. They are kept separate from one another, so no one has the complete picture, but they report to this matrix, or this senior officer, and he, in turn, correlates all this information. He passes on to somebody above him and somebody above him. Originally, he used to go to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, but he thought that disappeared, and where it stopped, he didn't know. But he said,
well, you know, what you're describing is a bloodless coup.
Yes, you can call it that. And he says even the president then was left out. And he says, you know, you heard President Carter's comments when he asked about the UFO cabal. They told him it was none of your business.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, and so so the military, but the thing is this, also I had this comment. One of the NORAD generals said about this matter when he was challenged about this, and he says, you know what happened when the civilians were in control? Look what happened to the atomic bomb. The Russians got all the information. Look what happened to the Philadelphia experiment. And he said the military were determined that it was never, ever going to happen again.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Stan Fulham, and he is the author of an incredible book, folks. It's called Challenges of Change. Stan, as we stepped away, I had just made the comment that what you just described sounds like a bloodless coup, so that the commander-in-chief is not actually in command.
It would appear not relating to UFOs or not to the UFO phenomena or not. But Kevin, I think it's important for your viewers to understand the basic reason for the so-called conspiracy of silence. It's always been discussed for many years. And can I just tell you what my sources have said about the conspiracy of silence?
Sure.
And the reasons for it?
Yeah.
Okay. It'll give the public a better idea about why this occurred. There are several reasons, actually, for the so-called conspiracy of silence. I'm not at all sure that a conspiracy exists in context of its definition by Webster's Dictionary, which describes it as a secret process for evil purposes. Now, was it a policy by governments to reveal information about the alien reality, not only to restrict information, but but in many cases to provide disinformation about UFO incidents, etc. Yes. Now, that may be called a conspiracy, if you wish. Now, but does that make it evil? There are literally hundreds of programs and projects established and conducted by governments, not only in the United States, but worldwide, that are classified, highly classified, with top secret information. That is done to secure classified government technologies, but also to protect military strategies for national security. That is government policy established worldwide. So is that evil? Well, I suppose it depends on the purpose of the restrictions on information. If it is to conceal government malfeasance, then of course it could be considered evil. But this was not the case with the UFO phenomena. It may be a conspiracy to conceal information, yes, but what we should be discussing is the purpose of that policy of concealment. So, and then I also like to point out is that there are other reasons why. Also I want to mention to you that I was amazed that, you know, this secret cabal, the UFO, that has managed to keep a lid on that UFO reality, in effect since World War II, because all the top technology of the atomic bomb and the Philadelphia experiment also disappeared. But with the UFO cabal, they maintained complete confidence, you know, and security. So from the very beginning, it seems that they managed to, they have done an excellent job. Like one general said, they have been successful beyond the wildest imaginations. So, but there have been reports of UFO sightings and abductions all over the world. So other nations must also have that information. It becomes even more incredible when you know that the information relating to UFOs is not an American exclusive. Other nations such as Russia, China, England, France, Germany, Brazil, and others have had this information for decades. Mm-hmm. In fact, as my book Challenges of Change revealed, President Yeltsin was going to reveal on national television all of the information Russia had, including a display of a number of crashed UFOs and alien bodies in cold storage. But President Clinton put a stop to that. The Chinese also have a wrecked UFO and an alien body. But when the top Chinese government official was asked what his government knew of the alien phenomena, he replied, "Let the United States speak first." And that speaks volumes. So those are major reasons for the conspiracy silence. So one more, a very important one, that I got from my other source, the translators. And they said that were there other reasons for the conspiracy silence? They said, yes, the aliens, that is in particular the Bertie's aliens, commonly referred to as the Greys, didn't want the world to know about their abductions of humans. And not only that, but didn't want other aliens to know too much of their abduction activity. So when it's viewed in that context, Kevin, there is some justification for the conspiracy of silence. It still may be a conspiracy, but is it evil? I ask you.
Well, if we're in league with a group of off-world entities that's abducting people and doing harm to them, as is reported in some cases, the people who have put us in league with them, yes, that's evil.
Well, okay. Are you talking about the Bertie's abductions of people on the world?
Well, I don't know who the Bertie's are.
The Bertie's are these ones are depicted in our movies and that sort of thing. They're about 3.5 to 4 feet mm-hmm. tall, have large bald heads with the black almond-shaped eyes.
Mm-hmm.
They have no ears and a small slit for the mouth.
Yeah, we commonly call them Greys. But when I say I don't know who they are, I mean, I don't know anything about them other than what's in the reports from humans that get abducted.
Well,
and what some of them talk about is horrendous. The implanting of, the impregnating of some female abductees and then the removal of the fetus at later dates and things like that. The trauma that these people go through, yeah, whoever put us in league with them are evil.
I agree, Kevin, yes, and I write about that. I have a full chapter in my book about that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons why I contacted the transcenders is because I wanted some information about just what was happening there. How threatening was it? How extensive was it? And the transcender spiritual group told me. Like you have your contacts, and so do many other people, and my transgender group, of 43,000 souls, they gave me that information that the Bertis have cloned themselves to death. Well, virtually, they're on their last generation. They live for several hundred years, but this is their last generation. So in order to revive their physical ability to repopulate, they have to do all these experiments, medical experiments, with beings with a similar DNA. And our DNA is fairly close to theirs. And so they went to the Alien Council and asked for permission. The Alien Council, not all agreed, but some of them agreed because out of compassion, said, fine, you're allowed to do this under certain conditions. And that's when they approached the American government and and Stalin in the late 1930s, because they were getting concerned about, you know, the Earth is now getting pretty dangerous. There are missiles, there's radar, and all this sort of thing. And so Stalin, as I wrote in my book, according to the information the transcenders give me, absolutely refused to have anything to do with them. But President Roosevelt and Truman decided, yes, that they would, in exchange for the alien technology. And so they continue, but most of their abductions are not done in the United States. Most of it done in China, Africa, South America, and different parts of the world. Mm-hmm. But they used to do abduct about 30 to 40,000 people a year. Now, because they refined their research, medical research, now very often they don't even abduct people. They can do it just by hovering above them or in the area and that type of thing. But it still is it can be very harmful to the abductees. And what about that situation? There was a quid pro quo, if you want to call it that, between the American government and the Bertis years mm-hmm. ago, which said, okay, for your technology, we'll turn a blind eye. But what I'm saying is, since they live in a partial CO2 environment, atmosphere, on the Bertis planet, they have the technology to remove CO2 from our environment. And what I'm suggesting, and I did from the first edition, is that somehow, if we can get the president of the United States to call in the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and say to the UFO cabal, now you are in communication with the Bertis, you tell them that this quid pro quo we had for all these years is now at an end unless you give us the equipment, the technology to remove carbon dioxide from our atmosphere. That is what my book in the first edition and the second edition was all about. Of course, now mm-hmm. I understand that the Alien Council decided they were going to intervene anyway, not immediately, or in perhaps 2015. But the question you raise is still a very valid one. What about that? Is that evil? To a lot of people, yes.
Well, I know if someone comes into a person's house, if it's not a gray, it's just another human, and they come into the house uninvited in the middle of the night and take someone out, everyone else in the house is justified in using deadly force to prevent it. That's a high crime of the highest order.
And, well, the Russians believe that. Mm-hmm. The Russians, that's their belief, and that's the reason why about 3-4 years ago they shot down a British UFO, a spaceship, and destroyed the spaceship and all the crew. Because their policy right from the very beginning is that there were no truck or trade with the British aliens. Now, the Americans took a different thing, took a different position. But there's still the question there about that, is it evil? Well, I guess,
you know, everybody has to make up their own mind. My mind is easily made up because I'm an ex-cop. And the answer is, it's not only evil, it's illegal. We'll be back. We'll be back right after this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Stan Fulham, and we're talking about the information that's in his amazing book called Challenges of Change. And it has to do with UFOs, extraterrestrials, ETs, EBs, MJ-12, all that stuff, and we're just now going to get into something I know a lot of you want to hear about. Those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. Sorry that you had to miss several universes of information, and indeed you did. But we're glad you're here now. Stan, as we went away for break, you had just briefly brushed past or brushed up against something that's been all over the news. You just sort of kind of mentioned it. And that is a prediction that you made that we could be seeing October the 13th, 2010, large numbers of UFOs parked in the skies above major cities. What about that?
Well, Kevin, I'm aware that the media is focusing on my prediction of an alien spacecraft display over our principal cities on the 13th of October, 2010.
Yeah.
I realize that it is a controversial and challenging statement, well, in large measure, because the factors affecting predictions are not always understood. And, of course, the deniers and the skeptics will rejoice if the display does not take place on the predicted date. Other predictions have met the same fate. However, what I would like to, and so I would like to make clear to your listeners that 13th of October 2010 is a tentative date. It is not an absolute, because all souls, that includes the agents, they have souls like we have God's gift of free will and choice, and therefore there can be no absolutes. However, the UFO display in 2010 is a vital initiative in the alien consoles plan to make themselves known and accepted by mankind as a peaceful and friendly civilization, with the objective to assist mankind in avoiding the environmental crisis which is looming on our horizon. So if delayed, it'll be a temporary postponement only. Now, the transcenders warn that we are looking at a huge cultural change, and the impact will have a dramatic effect on our belief systems, our cultures, our economic realities, etc. The alien consul understands that. After all, they have monitored and studied us from the very beginning of our existence on Earth. So the transcenders confirm that there are several major factors affecting a timetable for the aliens UFO display. First of all, the aliens are guided by the universal laws of free will and choice, which is God's gift to all souls. It is possible that on the 13th of October, that due to Earth changes and major earthquakes and all that sort of thing, and economic and financial crises, that the aliens will decide that to display their spacecraft over our cities may collapse humanity in fear, panic, and confusion. It would be just too much for mankind. So the aliens have witnessed this situation with countless thousands of other civilizations who polluted their planets to total extinction. Not a single being, an animal, or plant survived. So the transcenders warn that we are on that path of destruction. We are not the worst, but we're in the top 10%. Secondly, the aliens live in a different time element, and they see things not so much in context of a time frame, but rather in terms of concepts of situations existing not only on Earth, but in the universe. And the transcenders state that true, that the aliens don't function according to your time or calendar systems. Right now, they are focusing on your probable political, economic situations and looking for the optimum probability. Furthermore, they will not actually interact in cleaning up an atmosphere until our environmental situation is critical, perhaps in 2015, for mankind must learn from these critical challenges, otherwise we will simply continue in our destructive pollution. But first, they must demonstrate their peaceful intentions and friendship. I recognize that the UFO display is of vital importance to the introduction of mankind to the alien reality, but in my view, of even greater importance is the fact that the alien consul, consisting of the Pleiadians, the Alpha Centaurians, the Beartes, the Orions, the Sirians, the Posetes, Zeta Reticuli, and the Compsolites, that they have decided to save mankind from the environmental collapse of our planet. Now, countless thousands of alien civilizations have polluted their planets to total extinction. Not a single being, animal, or plant survived. That surely arouses the question expressed in a paraphrase of the biblical saying, "What art thou, man, that the aliens are mindful of thee?" So I thought I wanted to clear that up. I thought it's very important that it does. And there are reasons, of course, why they would, you know, the question very often that come up to me is that, well, why are we so special? Why would they bother with us? And they didn't. But what about these countless thousands of other civilizations they didn't bother with?
Good question.
And there's, well, there are two very important reasons, Kevin. One of them, of course, is that we are unique. The planet Earth is unique in the universe because we have the highest emotional energies of any planet in the universe. That is quite a phenomenal thing. That is the reason why they're so absolutely fascinated with Earth. Now, not only is it a beautiful planet, of course, but it is also very emotional. Other alien societies have little, or in some cases, such as the British, have absolutely no emotions. And so they are fascinated by these loving, hating, screaming, cheering, and crying beings on Earth. They don't fully understand it, but they are fascinated by it.
Well, you know, we don't fully understand it.
Over 300 billion aliens watched the Vancouver Winter Olympics. So they, secondly, they have, well, especially the Pleiadians, have monitored our world from the very beginning, and they have hope in our eventual spiritual development. So those are the main reasons, and I think it's important for your viewers to understand that from my book.
All right. Now, you have shared with us a great deal of information, and I understand that your sources are several sources here. One, your own personal sightings. Two, your personal experiences when you're with NORAD. But you've mentioned now several times the Transcenders. Who is that?
Yeah, well, you see, when I retired from the Air Force, and Dave did also a few years later, we didn't have all the answers to the UFO phenomena. In fact, when we retired, we had basically the same questions we had that all ufologists had. Who were they? Well, we knew something about the Greys, the Berties, but nothing else. Where were they from? Why were they here? Well, certainly to abduct humans, we knew that much for the medical research. But outside of that, we were left with these nagging questions. So obviously the aliens, though, were from a higher dimension. They could fly into the side of a mountain or into the sea at incredible speed and reappear totally unscathed moments later. They would appear on our radar screens and just as suddenly disappear. So obviously, they function beyond our third dimension physical laws. A spiritual friend suggested that I could get my answer from a higher dimensional reality, namely the spiritual realm. That was a very difficult thing for me to do, so I can understand the reader's disbelief, because I've been there. So eventually, I consulted, in desperation, I consulted Rick Thurston, a very reputable and world-renowned channeler, who lives here in Canada, and I began my communications with the spiritual transcender group of 43,000 souls for about the past 12 years. I am not, and Kevin, I want to make this clear. I am not a missionary. I am not a religious zealot. I am not trying to convert anybody to any concept or belief. The information given by the transcenders is vastly beyond my intellect and knowledge. And as one reader said, if Stan Fulham wrote this book and not the transcenders, then he should be getting an award for the greatest fiction of the century. And I would like to just tell you something about the transcenders, if I may.
All right.
Kevin?
Yeah.
The transcenders consist of 43,000 very old souls who interact as a single mind and blend their wealth of experience and knowledge to provide advice and assistance to entities throughout the universe. In their previous lives, and they've had thousands of them, they have been great political and military leaders, scientists and philosophers. There are those who have started religions and those who have ended religions. There are those entities who have achieved a great power and dominance not only on Earth, but on other planets and spiritual realms. What a vast wealth of knowledge and experience. And their mission is to assist souls on their journey through the rugged trail of thousands of incarnations throughout the universe with advice and information from their knowledge and the Akashic records. Since the spiritual entities have no voice box, they communicate by thought through the channeler's voice box to individuals on Earth and throughout the universe. But the realm in which our subconscious souls exist, that's where the transcenders are, called heaven, paradise, nirvana, happy hunting grounds, or whatever you want to call it, is non-separate. That is the reality, although many souls are not sufficiently devout to be aware of it. It is like a drop of water in the ocean or a pebble of sand on the beaches of the world. You may choose to focus temporarily on one of your incarnate experiences, but your soul is fundamentally part of creation. And this spiritual truth has arrived in none other than the words of Pope John Paul II, who wrote to the Jesuit journal Sitticott just shortly before he died, that heaven and hell do not exist as places. They are a state of mind. Finally, the reality of the spiritual plane is recognized, that which was recognized by mystics of all religions for the past 2,000 years. So, that is part of the story. There's more to it than that. The transcenders, for example, don't sit in judgment of anybody. We do not tell you to do this or do that. We do not override the decisions and the choice of others, for free will and choice is your God-given right, and we cannot interfere with God's gift to each and every one of us. And it goes on and on. But that is my main source, and the reason why I went there is because, as my spiritual friend told me, advised me, is that there are no answers to the alien phenomena, a reality, on Earth. I've talked to scientists. I've read every book on UFOs for the last 50 years. There was this sighting and that sighting and this conjecture and that myth, but there was nobody that came out and could tell me who they were, where they're from, why they're here, are they a threat? The transgenders told me that, and that's the reason why my book is so controversial. So anyway, Kevin, that's the background. I thought it was important for your listeners to know that.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what let's do for the listeners. We're going to open up the telephone line and allow our audience to join us. If anybody's got a question or a comment for Stan Fulham, the telephone number to call is 623-444-5889. The toll-free number, if you live in the USA or Canada, the toll-free number is 888-223-4599. And if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, then you can call our main number, 623-444-5889. We'll be happy to talk with you. Or you can use something that we call the flash message, and we have that on the website. You just go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and you'll see a graphic about tonight's show. And on the right, to the right of that graphic, you'll see the link that says flash message, but you must be outside the USA and outside of Canada, or I'll never see it. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hi, Rusty.
Hi, Stan.
Hi, Rusty.
Hi. I'm wondering about the number 43,000. It couldn't help me but think of the 144,000 in the Bible. What significance does that number have?
I really don't know, Rusty, but I don't think it has anything to do with the Bible. Judging from I've had conversations with the transcenders for the past 12 years, usually about for an hour at a time, and sometimes as often as twice a month. So I've hundreds and hundreds of pages of notes. We've discussed everything under the sun, including the Bible, including Christ. Christ did exist, yes, indeed. Did he walk on water? Yes. Did he cure the sick and the dying? Yes. Did he take two loaves of bread and five fish and fed a multitude of 5,000? Yes. Christ did all these things. So I'm a great believer in Christ, in his message. But unfortunately, Christ's message, the bulk of the message that Christ preached is not in the Bible. Not according to the transcenders, it's not. And amongst the transcenders Peter the Apostle is a member of the transcenders. Abraham, he's another one. And so they have a pretty, well, certainly Peter the Apostle has a pretty good idea about what Christ taught.
All right, but as far as the 43,000, there's no significance to the number?
Well, not according to transgenders or not.
Okay. Rusty, you have another question or comment?
Pardon me?
I was just asking Rusty if he has another question or comment.
Yeah, I was wondering, have these transcenders given you any information up till now that has come true?
Yes.
You know, a prediction, so
oh,
to speak.
Yes, they did. And I'll give you one. When you read my book, when you have the opportunity to read my book, you'll see that there are many other things that the transmitters informed me about, which came true. But one of them is going back to prior to the American invasion of Iraq, after this 9/11 incident. In the month of December, I think it was about 2-3 months before the invasion, I asked the transcenders, I said, it appears that the Americans are intent on invading Iraq. Do you see that happening? And they said, yes, according to the future probability, that is a major probability, it will happen. I said, when do you see this happening? They said, probably at the end of February, and that's when it will begin. I said, how long would it last? They said, it could probably last 2 years, but in all probability, it would last 21 days. They told me that in December. How long did the war last? 21 days. When did it start? At the end of February. So that's just one, Martin. There were many other things that we discussed that they told me about, but that was a major one.
Well, one more quick one. You mentioned October 13th, I think, was the date, and then you said it may not happen, but it would be shortly after. How long is shortly after?
Well, that I don't know, but I would think, gathering from my conversation, by the way, Martin, what I want to get clear is that information about October 13th didn't come from the transcenders. It came from another very important source, but I very seldom talk to them, but I did get that information. But I asked the transcenders, what do you see of it? And they confirmed, yes, they saw that as happening. That was a major probability. But this, and then they went on to explain about, you know, the problems with that. There are no absolutes because of conditions on Earth, because we are now going to experience the beginning of what the Mayan prophecy talked about, major earthquakes, tsunamis. That's now going to start taking place this fall. The collapse of the financial systems in the world is another thing. And for them to appear on top of that, if I've explained, would be just too much for mankind to accept. So they'll postpone it. But what I want to make clear is that it was, they're not landing. They're not communicating with us. They're just going to be above our cities. And the purpose of it is to introduce themselves once at a time to mankind. So next year, it'll be a little more aggressive. They may do some communication up to about 2015, when I'm told is that they will have several hundred spacecraft in our atmosphere cleaning up our atmosphere of all the poisonous gases. Because right now, the carbon dioxide, average carbon dioxide in our atmosphere, the pollution of carbon dioxide is 9%. It's increasing at 1% annually, and the critical mass is 22%, in which we cannot survive. Mankind could not survive that. So it'll give you some idea of the situation we're in. When it gets up to be around 12-14%, the situation becomes very, very bad. Now, in China, the transcenders have informed me that in China, in some of their cities, there are people who work with masks on all day, and they go to bed with a mask on. The only time they remove the mask is to eat or to drink. And the situation is very critical, but the Chinese government sort of hush-hushes this situation because they have a major role in creating employment and shelter for all these millions of people. And they fear that if they don't, they're going to have civil unrest. So the carbon dioxide situation in the atmosphere is critical. I know some people talk, well, that's a lot of hogwash and one thing and another. So in my book, I suggested a test. What I suggested they do, some group, some environmental group or government agency, all you got to do is get some shed. Say 8x10, completely enclosed with windows to which it could be monitored. Medical doctors would have to monitor this. You have two volunteers sitting there, and then you flow in this carbon dioxide starting at 1%, 2%, 3%, and so forth, and then you watch the results. I guarantee you, when they get to around 14-15%, they'll be out of there. And so I tell people, you don't believe me? Don't have to believe me. Put it to a test. No, I can't do this because nobody wants to talk to me. I've talked to politicians. I talked to the public. They're not interested in me. It would have to be some group, some environmental group or some government agency, maybe the World Health Organization.
Lord, help us, not them. Okay, we got to go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Stefan in Quebec City. How are you?
Good. How are you, Stefan?
Doing excellent. Mr. Fulham, I just have to congratulate you for two reasons. Mainly, you know, in light of what happened in 2008 and the no-show on October 14th, I think it takes a lot of courage to come out with something like this on such a close date, even though it's in a different year. And also, the number 143,000 is significant because it does relate to the Great Pyramid in some way. There were reportedly 144,000 casing stones on
But the number is 40,000, Stefan, the number is 43,000, not 143.
I've heard from a few sources and read in a few places it was actually 144,000.
Well,
talking about the Bible.
Okay, the number... The number that Stan has talked about is 43,000.
There are a few researchers that stated that it was 144,000 casing stones, 36,000 for each side.
Okay, but you're missing the point. The number he talked about is 43,000 transcenders.
Oh, okay. My mistake.
Yeah. No problem.
And the other thing is, what is your name again? Well, what is your name again?
Stefan.
I didn't get that.
Yeah, it's Stefan.
Stefan. Okay, Stefan. In all my conversations with the transcenders, and I want to give you a bit of my background. I was born and raised in the Catholic community. I attended a Catholic university. I studied religion and philosophy at a Catholic university. That's my background. But then, later on in life, I did a study on these matters, and then with the transcenders, I inquired. Of course, they would know they're in so-called heaven and paradise and nirvana, call it whatever you wish. But they tell me, and Pope John Paul just said a while ago, it's the heaven and hell do not exist as places, as a state of mind. The transcender would tell you the same thing. When you so-called die, you don't die. Nobody ever dies. We live forever and eternally. But when we cross over, when you die, if you want to use that word, you go back to the spiritual realm, and there's work, a lot of work there for you. But the more developed souls then unite in groups to do certain work, like the transcenders group is. But then you meet with your family, your friends, your relatives, you discuss then what you have learned and what you have yet to learn, and you decide on your future reincarnation on Earth, or you may go to some other planet. That's the way it is, and they've said this to me, and many, many other mystics have said the same thing for 2,000 years. So, Stan, I'm afraid this bit about in the Bible. And the other thing, I tell people, look, in terms of the Bible, I've studied that, and there's one book, well, in fact, two. Who Wrote the Bible by Richard Elliot Friedman in the United States, one of the top biblical scholars in the world. That deals with the Old Testament. And if you're going to read one book, just read the book, by Mark Herman.
All right, we have to step away for a break, and we'll be back right after this. To the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Stan Fulham, and we have a caller on hold. Stan, let's go straight to the telephone. And caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Mark from Los Angeles.
Hello, Mark.
Hi, Kevin and Stan. Kevin and I talked a little bit earlier about this, and this is my fascination. I do consider myself a Christian, and I know if these UFOs came on October 13th or any day that it would change religion as we know it. You did mention that the Bible, what we know pretty much is true, you know, Jesus came and all that. Do you know, is Jesus or is God or any of these other people, are they extraterrestrials from another planet? These trans, or I forgot what you call them now, transcenders, are they all aliens, or what can you tell us about that, and how it will affect the Christian community if this happened.
Well, Mark, the transgender group consists of souls, very ancient souls, who have lived, or incarnated is the word they use, on not, well, some of them have never been on Earth, but they've been on many other planets. Some of them have existed, incarnated in spiritual realms, because the universe is a very complicated, mysterious thing. And they have lived for millions and millions, perhaps for billions of years. They have a wealth of experience and knowledge. So they see all these things. Now, is that they bring this knowledge to help us on our the rugged trail, because we have incarnated for this one particular life that we're on. We've lived, and I'm sure you, like you have and everybody else, we've lived for hundreds, and some of us have lived for thousands of other lives on other planets and that type of thing. And that thing continues and continues for millions and millions of years. It's a pretty, I call it a pretty rugged trail. And then in terms of Christianity, in terms of Christ, Christ was, when he appeared before Pilate, according to transgenders, and Peter, the apostle, is a member of the transgenders, so he's aware of what happened. He appeared before Pilate, and Pilate asked him, "Art thou the king? Art thou the Son of God?" And Christ said, "Thou hast said it, yes." And I asked the transgenders about that. And the transgenders said, "Stan, if you," and if you, they were talking to you, Mark, they say, "Mark, if you were there, and Pilate asked you, are you the Son of God? You would have to say, yes, I am. We are all created from God." But Christ is a very, very highly developed soul. He is almost like a special creation of itself. And it's, and what he does all over the universe, not only on Earth, he spreads that message that he did of, you know, Christian love and compassion and helping your fellow man, all that sort of thing. He does this to his consciousness throughout the universe. Now, according to the Mayan prophecies, the world pretty well comes to an end in 2012. Well, it doesn't really come to an end, but there's a major shift in the spiritual consciousness of mankind, according to transgenders. When the mankind rises over a period, it doesn't happen overnight, over a period of several years, our consciousness rises to a higher Christ consciousness. So will religions disappear? And I don't think so, but they will. The churches will function somewhat differently than what they do now. They'll be more spiritual and less dogmatic, as most of them are today. I don't know if that answers your question, Mark, but that's it. But I would suggest, though, Mark, what you could do. There's the two books I suggested that when I'm discussing this with anybody, I suggest two books. Just two books you read. Who Wrote the Bible by Richard Elliot Friedman in the United States, and the other one is Misquoting Jesus by Bart Ehrman. And it'll give you an entirely different perspective on Christianity. And as far as the Muslims, well, I have no comment about them. Any God that will spend eternity watching all of his beloved having eternal sex, no, I'm afraid that's not my God. Sorry.
All right. We've got a flash. Mark, thank you for the call. We have a flash message from Leonardo in Puerto Rico. He says, "Hi, Kevin. Good music. Ask your guest, why did Clinton give the Chinese plans to the neutron bomb and nothing happened to him? He gave a national secret to a nation that would like to control us? I do not understand some points from your guest." Let me answer that, and then you can if you want to, but we have another one to get to. Leonardo, that's the point. The president is a civilian. And the point that our guest made was that's an example right there of exactly why the military doesn't want civilians involved in the UFO stuff. Because there's a president giving away secrets, as you say, and he's a civilian. So that makes their point. John in the United... pardon me. John in the United Kingdom. "Hi, guys. The ancients believed in a higher intelligence, not the men from Mars, I guess. If these aliens are off-world, then why are they interested in our nuclear sites?"
What was that, Kevin? Why are they, what?
Why are they interested in our nuclear sites?
Oh, well, they are concerned about our nuclear arsenals on Earth, and they're very, very concerned about it. And the transgender have told me repeatedly, ever since I first talked to them, there will be no nuclear war. You know, we've had people predict World War III and a nuclear war that'll destroy the world and that sort of thing. And the transgender said, no, that is not. The World War III will never happen. Now they're getting confused with a war of beliefs. They're made, well, like what's going on now. It's getting worse and worse. A war between basically the Muslim world and the Christian world, and this may become a little worse as we go along. But in terms of the nuclear war, they will not allow it. And the reason why, and this is very important for listeners to understand, is that because a nuclear explosion, well, especially of that volume, of that nature, would affect the ley lines. Are you aware of the ley lines? That
oh, yeah, we've done many, many shows on ley lines.
Okay. It would distort those ley lines, and this would have a very severe effect upon their space travel. And so they cannot allow that to happen, and they will not allow it to happen. Now, but I said, well, then how about the Hiroshima and Nagasaki? Why did they allow that? They said because mankind has a lesson to learn how devastating, how terrible these nuclear bombs are. They allowed that because they said it will not destroy the world. They said there's a probability today there may be a similar situation between India and Pakistan where the future Taliban group may eventually take over Pakistan and end up in a war against India. There may be, a situation where a bomb, a nuclear bomb, is dropped on India and vice versa. But then the aliens would intrude and stop it right there because they don't want it to go any further than that. But as far as a nuclear war, no, that will never happen. They will never allow that to happen.
All right, back now, to the telephone. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's John from Vancouver Island.
Hello, John.
Hi. Hello, Stan.
Yes, Don.
Hi. I'll just... I've been reading Richard Dolan, who's been... You know, he's got two books out so far about UFOs and how that's created the security state within the U.S.
Yes.
And his conjecture is that we've got two civilizations. One is the one that we live in, and then we've got a secret civilization that's much further ahead. He terms it a breakaway civilization. And, you know, this would be a result of, you know, going back to Truman, which actually has been documented by William Cooper. So if the original intention was to, I don't know, keep a lid on things, what we have now are two civilizations. One is a breakaway, the other is more or less, I don't know how you would put it.
The throwaways.
I'll use the slave state. But ultimately, you know, whether it was good intentions or not, I don't believe you can have two civilizations, one breakaway, sustaining, going into the future. So I see it breaking up. I see something really...
Well, what do you see breaking up?
Well I can't see a breakaway civilization with a knowledge far ahead of the rest of the civilization being that secretive. I just can't see that being sustained into the future. So something has to break down.
Oh, yeah. Are you suggesting like in sort of a secret arrangement with some of the aliens? Is that what you're suggesting? And that's how you would have the other civilization working with the aliens? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, not according to transgenders. That's not the way it's going to be. is that they're working as a group. All the major planetary systems, I mentioned them, like the Pleiades and the Pleiadians, the Alpha Centauri and so forth, meet regularly, about once a month, in what's called the Alien Council of Eight. And they have our interest at heart, and they intend to help us, and they will, and by 2015. So I don't think they're trying to divide humanity. And the other thing is that, you know, my book deals more with that. I can't deal with it in this program. We don't have the time for it. But there are major changes that takes place in the next 10 years, major changes. One of them is I talk about this Russian mystic. Not a mystic, oh, I don't know what to call him, a guru or whatever it is. He's quite a young man right now, but he's going to have a major effect upon the world in terms of raising the spiritual consciousness of mankind. And it's for all of mankind. It's just not for some. So you're going to find that there's a greater cohesion, a greater reconciliation between the Muslims and Christians and this sort of thing, and that'll all happen in about 10 years' time. And major changes in the Catholic Church, you know, is that... the next pope will be the last pope, or it'll be replaced by a concept. The religion doesn't disappear, the church doesn't disappear, but it'll be ruled by a council mostly of women. There'll be more women pastors and all this sort of thing, but the church and churches and religions throughout the world become more spiritual, but it's like a common spiritual consciousness that it's almost what they call the Christ consciousness. So I don't see in the future where you're going to see that big separation of civilization. I don't see that. Not from my conversations with the Transcenders, certainly not.
Well, I think it exists right now, so I guess that would have to devolve into one civilization.
Well, yeah, maybe to some extent that may be true, but I don't know enough about that to comment about that, really. But, you know, there's a lot of suspicion about what goes on some of these higher levels, a lot of suspicions. And I think some of it is justified. We sometimes wonder about who the hell is running this world, who runs our media, who runs our finances. It's a very good question. A good part of my book deals with the financial manipulations that have taken place over the world for the past 300 years. And that's one of the things that is going to lead to a total financial collapse within the next year, starting off in the United States. The United States is bankrupt.
All right, we have to step away for break. Let me ask our caller, are you willing to hang on through the break?
Yes.
All right, you hang in there. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back for our final segment right after this. Welcome back, and we are talking this evening here on the Kevin Smith Show with Stanley Fulham. And we have a caller on hold, so let's go straight to the telephone. And caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Tony from Denver.
You said Tony?
Yep, Tony from Denver.
Yeah, Tony. All right, what's on your mind?
Stan, I would like to, first of all, thank you for your service.
Yeah, go ahead, Tony.
I would also like to thank you for sticking your neck out and giving us the prediction of October the 13th.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
My question for you is, when the aliens show up on the 13th, will it be in the daytime or at nighttime?
Well, according to my source, they would appear for several hours during the daytime when they're very visible to the public. And also because the TVs internationally will be focused on them, and so the world will actually see them. But they won't communicate and they won't land or anything like that, but they will appear for several hours. That's the plan. One of the things also, I'm glad you brought that up, because I asked the Trend Center just a few days ago about that, and I said, you know, we're talking about a large display, a very large display, and they said, well, they discussed this regularly at the Alien Council, and they thought that might be just too much for mankind. It would look as if they're taking over the world type of thing. So they decided to have a more moderate display. So what is a moderate display? I don't know. Two or three spacecraft? I don't know. But when you get two or three spacecraft over Beijing, Moscow, Washington, New York, London, Paris, then surely God, the public will get the message. And it's not going to be as threatening. Yeah, Tony?
I have another question. What can you say about the reptilians?
I asked about that myself, because you read a lot about reptilians. And I have it in my book, and I deal with them quite extensively in my book. They're not a very nice bunch of people at all. No, I won't call them people, but beings or aliens. They live far off in the universe someplace. And there's a lot of them. I think there's about 100 billion of them in their empire. And they are quite technologically, they're quite advanced. Like, they have spacecraft, and they travel over the over parts of the universe, mainly in our galaxy, looking for food. And their food is two-legged food, most of it. They eat animals as well, but they capture beings, and they bring them to their empire, to the planets. They have several. And what they do, they have these vast, well, we call them ranches, just like we have our cattle. And they raise these beings and to feed on them. The last time they tried to invade Earth about a million years ago, I think it was there, but I forget exactly how long ago. And that's when the Pleiadians and the Alpha Centaurians, and the Alpha Centaurians are the greatest military complex in the universe. And they chased them away from Earth. They were going to try to come back about the time of Christ, about 2,000 years ago, but they because they thought, you know, with all the animals we have on Earth and all the human beings, and we reproduce very rapidly, that we'd be an excellent food source for them. But they Council of Eight met them. I don't know where they met them, and I suppose destroyed a number of their battleships, and then they returned to the Reptilian Empire, and have never come back. But they're not a very nice bunch. But from my conversations, actually, with the Transcenders, it appears that they're not very nice beings, but there are others who are just as bad, maybe worse, in the universe. So it's a universe that when God created the universe, and he gave us free will and choice, and said, go out and experience all things. And we screwed up. We're the ones that doing the evolving in different ways and all this sort of thing. God doesn't see it as bad or good. It just is. It's all part of experience. Not a very nice one, mind you. Yes, Don?
All right, Tony. Thank you for the call. All right. We have time for one call if you call right now. 2 minutes from now will be way too late because we're running out of time. Pardon me, we have weather changing, and that's causing a little bit of a sinus problem for me. Anyway, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Yes.
You there?
Go ahead, Brent.
Okay, first question is for you. How's your tooth doing?
I am much better, thank you.
Okay, now, Stan, I have a question for you. How are they set up to deal with big oil, the military-industrial complex, and greed?
That's a good question, because they are a curse upon the world, aren't they? Look at the harm they've done to the world. Well, in fact, the world has no idea how much harm they've caused. But the thing is that we have free will and choice. It is what we have done, and they will not interfere with that.
However,
We have got to deal with that ourselves. We have been manipulated.
We have been manipulated to think certain ways.
Yes, we have, and we still are. We still are. But it's all coming to an end very rapidly within the next several years. That's all going to come to an end, thanks God. Especially with our financial and economic system collapsing within the next 2 years, what is going to replace it? So it's part of that new spiritual consciousness that mankind will be developing within the next 10 years. And all these, the Illuminati and all the rest of them, and the oil cartel, that'll all be gone. There are alternative energy systems that are being invented and developed right now, should be on the market within 2 to 3 years, that revolutionize the world. So I suggest maybe what you could do is read my book, you can go to the website. It's called sites.google.com/channels/challenges of change. If you go there, and it'll give you some, I think it's important, because there's other issues I wish we could have dealt with. Like, for example, the nuclear threat and hope. I wish we could have dealt with that. We could have dealt also with the collapsing financial systems here within the next several months or a year. That's very, very important. But we, unfortunately, we're on the program. We're limited by time.
That we are. Let me ask you, of all the stuff that you have learned in your conversations with these transcenders, what is to you the single most important thing you have heard them say?
Is that the universe created by God, and he created all our souls, and then we're on this rugged trail, and it goes on for eternity. There's no end, and we reincarnate. Reincarnation is a fact, and there's no hell. There's no heaven either. And even in the spiritual world, there are some conflicts, not wars or anything like that, but that is, I think, basically as the basic concepts, that would be the most important for me, because don't forget my background was, heaven and hell. You go to church, if you miss Mass on Sunday, you're going to go and burn to hell, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've left all that behind, thanks God. But again, I'm telling my listeners, I've read a lot of books in my lifetime. Two books that you should read, and I mentioned them, about Who Wrote the Bible by Friedman, and the other one is by Misquoting Jesus. And the other book you should read is Challenges of Change. It's not my book. Like the retired civil engineer from Seattle, I think it was, and he said to me that, he said, I know you did, it's not your book, it was a transcender's book.
All right, we're out of time. That's it. That's a wrap, folks. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.